perhaps NPR's journalism gets people riled up, but when that's just one part of what public broadcasting does.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. And on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, we're going to look at ourselves, the public media system, which is once again under fire by Republicans in Washington. In recent weeks, PBS announced it's shutting down its diversity office and firing the two executives who ran it in order to comply with an executive order by President Trump. PBS and NPR officials are being called in to testify before a congressional committee as lawmakers move to, perhaps, defund the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. It comes with Trump and his top advisor, billionaire Elon Musk, making such efforts a priority in their new administration. Efforts to defund public broadcasting in the past have fallen short. To talk about the lay of the land this time, I spoke with Mike Jansen, an editor at public media trade news outlet Current. So, you know, in the time I've worked here, I can't remember a period when there wasn't some sort of like public media emergency going on. Does this time feel any different to you?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I know that, you know, everyone is concerned, and I think there's, you know, it's important to be vigilant and to know what the threats are. But, you know, when it comes to our coverage and how we look at this issue, I try to, you know, stick with the facts, stick with what we know rather than speculate too much, and also look at the history of these kinds of threats and how they played out, right? And, you know, what I'm keeping in mind right now is that there have been times before where we had a Republican president and Republicans controlled both houses of Congress, and there were threats to funding and they didn't succeed. In the end, lawmakers still decided to fund CPB. So, and that's been happened several times. I mean, when Trump was in office the first time, he proposed zeroing out CPB funding and was not successful with that push. So, you know, that's the history that we're looking at. And then thinking about, well, what is different now? You know, how are we in a different scenario than we have been previously? I suppose one new wrinkle is that we have DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency, that's, you know, headed by Elon Musk. We know Elon Musk has been critical of NPR and public broadcasting. He, you know, beats up on it on X quite often. And then you look at who's in Congress, you know, the lawmakers who would be making these decisions to fund CPB or not. You know, last year, for example, you know, we saw the Uri Berliner kerfuffle erupted NPR, and, you know, they tried to call Catherine Maher to the Hill for a hearing, and she didn't go because she said she had a board meeting she had to be at and she couldn't be there. Even in that board hearing, you heard Republicans saying, look, I don't always agree with NPR's coverage or public radio's coverage. I don't always agree with how they report on me, but I understand that public broadcasting is important to my area and my constituents, you know. And I think that's what we've seen play out in the past, is that, you know, in the end, though, some Republican lawmakers make noises about what they hear on NPR and how they don't like it, how they think NPR should lose funding. In the end, I think that the balance tips towards even Republican lawmakers who see value in the public safety services that public broadcasting provides, in the educational programming that they provide, whether that's PBS, kids programming, or, you know, a lot of stations that do educational training and outreach in their communities. These are not controversial areas to be behind, you know, whereas perhaps NPR's journalism gets people riled up. But when that's just one part of what public broadcasting does. And I think that, you know, over the years, it's been successful in finding allies among both Republicans and Democrats. And that's what has kept the funding safe until now. So is that mix different enough? I don't know. And I think we'll just have to see how things play out. But I understand the alarm, but I tend to be somewhat more skeptical, I suppose, that anything really catastrophic will happen. I hope I'm right.
What would the impacts be if CPB was zeroed out? I mean, you know, you've got hundreds of member stations that to some degree or another are, you know, making their annual budgets based on some sort of funding from CPB.
So the most recent information I could find in terms of the entire system of public broadcasting, how much of the money for it is coming from CPB. And in fiscal year 2022, CPB funding accounted for 14.7% of the system's total income. In fiscal year 2023, CPB's community service grants made up 10.6% of the average public TV station's total revenue, 6% of the average public radio station's revenue. And just to explain, in case you or listeners don't know, what is a community service grant? That's how CPB distributes the bulk of the money to the system. Is, you know, a station can qualify, if it meets certain requirements, it can qualify to receive a community service grant. It gets this grant on an annual basis from CPB. The pool of money is divided, I think it's 75% to TV stations, 25% to radio stations. And that formula has been in place for some time. So 10% for public TV, 6% for public radio average station. I mean, that's a chunk. It's if a station lost that money, would it collapse? I mean, probably not. It doesn't sound like it would be deadly, but it would certainly be difficult, you know. Now, rural stations, however, would be more hurt than other stations. And the information I have from CPB says that CPB grants represented 17% of an average rural station's revenue versus 9% for non-rural. Half of all rural grantees, which is 120 stations, relied on CPB for at least 25% of their revenue. 33 rural stations, many of which are on Native American reservations, rely on CPB funding for at least 50% of their revenue. So you can see that these stations would really be hard hit, you know, especially Native stations, which are an important part of the system. Rural stations also have a harder time raising money from individual donors than urban stations do. Individual donations represent 28% of an average rural station's total revenue versus 40% for non-rural. And because rural stations often depend on multiple transmitters to reach remote areas, also because they have low population density that they're dealing with, broadcasting and engineering costs are higher at rural stations. It represents 19% of the average station's total expenses versus 14% for non-rural. So, you know, whereas some stations may be more cushioned from the loss of CPB funding, you could see some real, you know, really difficult effects on stations in rural areas and on Native reservations.
I know this is a question that I think that maybe the average news consumer struggles with, but is there an important distinction between NPR, defund NPR as the buzzword, and what you're talking about, which is individual member stations from coast to coast? You know, it's hard to imagine that President Trump has a beef with a member station's coverage. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, NPR is just part of the, you know, the larger system. And NPR really gets directly very little CPB support. So often when people are saying defund NPR, it's like maybe they don't totally understand how the funding even works. You know, now, of course, money goes to stations and then stations pay NPR for the programming. So indirectly, NPR is receiving support in that way, but they don't get, you know, they don't get a CSG. They maybe get CPB support for, you know, certain initiatives year to year, but it's not the same kind of setup. And yeah, NPR is, you know, just one part of what public radio and television offer, obviously. And I think NPR ends up being kind of the lightning rod because it's the journalism, you know, that is most prominent. And, you know, the journalism is controversial. It, you know, journalism, when it's doing what it should do, is reporting on people doing things they shouldn't be doing, misdeeds, you know, that kind of thing. And politicians don't like that, obviously, because sometimes they are doing things they shouldn't be doing. So, you know, it's kind of the punching bag. It used to be different. I mean, I was kind of looking back over the history of these arguments in the system. And I mean, back in the 90s, it was PBS was airing edgy films like Tongues Untied, which was about Black gay men, you know, and that became part of the effort to try to defund NEA and NEH, you know, and Jesse Helms was up in arms about that kind of thing. Maybe it's saying something about where public television has gone that today it's not the lightning rod that NPR is, you know. I mean, these days, I don't think we're seeing that kind of programming on public TV the way that we used to, which, you know, depending on what you want to see, that's a good thing or a bad thing, I guess. British dramas are not going to get lawmakers up in arms. You know? So I think that it's we're in a situation now where it's NPR and they're supposedly woke or, you know, controversial coverage that is getting the attention of Republicans. But yeah, I mean, NPR is just, even for a public radio station, I mean, there are some that are more dependent on national programming, but, you know, there are plenty of public radio stations that, yeah, they air NPR shows, but they air lots of other stuff. They do lots of local programming. They do local outreach and events. So even then, NPR is just a piece of what you hear on your local public radio station.
Now, from an ethical perspective, I mean, whether or not a Republican Congress advances a bill to defund CPB and follows through, do you think that there's a risk of a chilling effect here, knowing in the public media system that the president and his administration kind of have targeted public media in terms of what the journalism will do? I mean, do you think we should be looking over our shoulders at this point?
That's a good question. I mean, I don't feel like you've seen much happening in the way of, you know, journalists in the system backing off of stories or, you know, I mean, I think a lot of the hardest hitting reporting in the system is really not to diminish NPR at all, but it's really coming from local stations that have big newsrooms and are, you know, doing reporting in their communities that no one else does. Because in some communities these days, the public radio station might be the only local news source even. With, you know, newspapers declining and that kind of thing. And I feel like you're not seeing them back off from accountability journalism that they've been doing. And that's not really on the radar of, you know, people who are saying defund NPR. Now, you know, last year when NPR had this, you know, Uri Berliner thing bubble up, one measure they took in response, seemingly, was to create what they call a backstop, where they're adding a new tier of editors who are this, you know, other line of review of their coverage. And some people saw that as a capitulation. You know, I'm not saying I do necessarily, but to some people they were saying, well, it look, when you're doing this, it looks like you're acknowledging that some of what Uri Berliner was saying was correct. And why are you doing that? You know, these people who were critics of that were saying this looks cowardly, or it looks, you know, like you are taking this more seriously than you should. I have to say, you know, my reporters probably don't even like being edited by me. So reporters having another line of editing, you know, it doesn't seem like an especially popular thing to do. And, you know, I've heard, you know, grumbling that, you know, some journalists at NPR are not happy with this, which I don't think is surprising. You know, I think it's like, why? You know, you might just wonder, look, if we were doing fine before, why do we need this now? You know, but, you know, it may be going a little far to say that that was a response to Republican lawmakers, you know, pressure of any kind. And overall, I feel like we've seen things hold pretty tight, you know. So, you know, I don't think journalists are the type to be chilled by a chilling effect very easily, you know, or at least that's what I'd like to think.
It does occur to me, though. I mean, as I said, someone who's been through these kind of, I don't know, ados before, when the public media system offer a level of self-criticism and introspection that can balloon in a way that many other news outlets just don't do. I mean, no one's looking at defunding Fox News or whatever. I mean, I understand they don't get government funding in that same way, but we're holding ourselves to a standard that opens us up to the type of criticism that is being levied at NPR right now that, you know, just many other news outlets don't even entertain.
Right, right. I would just add to that, I think you could say, you know, if stations or NPR were to start, you know, checking themselves and, you know, backing away from hard-hitting journalism, that could, I think, bring about negative effects on other fundraising streams. You know, what if listeners notice that kind of thing and then decide, well, I'm not going to support you anymore because you're not doing the kind of journalism I value? Or what if you're, you know, getting grants from foundations that are looking to support that kind of coverage, and if you water it down, the foundations are going to not be interested in funding you anymore, you know? So I think there's a calculus involved where, sure, you might feel like you're saving your CPB funding, but what if you're hurting yourself in other ways by making those kinds of decisions? And I think that folks in the system, I think, are aware of that, you know?
Philosophically speaking, is there a different way to fund public media that would just remove this question from the table? You know, it's a kind of perennial punching bag. I remember Mitt Romney talking about how much he likes Big Bird, but it shouldn't be funded by the taxpayers. Like, it comes around again and again and again and again and again. And do critics of that have a point, maybe, that, you know, using taxpayer funding just shouldn't go toward this?
Right. I mean, there's already a little bit of a cushion built in with the funding model, which, you know, I would say probably most of your listeners aren't aware of, which is that CPB's funding is 2 years in advance. So the decision they made about funding this year is actually about what money they will get 2 years from now. And that was built into the system to supposedly be a cushion for political interference or a firewall. There have been efforts over the year and discussion, it comes up again and again, about creating a trust fund for public broadcasting, which would be just like a pot of money that would be established and then nobody would be able to touch it. This would not be even decided on a yearly basis. It would just run on its own, basically, you know, and I guess there would probably have to be some way of revisiting how it's set up or something, but, you know, basically it would be more, even more insulated from political interference than what we have now. But it's just a non-starter. I mean, I think I value the folks who have been trying to make that argument, but it's, I think, just that you'd have to have much more support in Congress among Democrats and, you know, and more Republicans even than we have now, I think, to ever make anything like that happen. So I don't see that happening anytime soon. As for, you know, should the government fund public broadcasting at all? I mean, I might get in hot water for saying this kind of thing, but, you know, I mean, and I'm not the only one who thinks this, but it's like, to me, it just seems a little odd that we have this system where we fund radio and television, but we don't fund any other kind of media. You know what I mean? Like, it's a historical decision that back in the 60s, when the Public Broadcasting Act was created, made sense, right? But today, it's like, well, why can't? And it comes out of the fact that, you know, public radio and TV grew out of, especially radio, grew out of an educational context. It was mostly universities that started the very first public radio stations, you know, like state universities. So there was kind of that precedent. But these days it's like, well, what about, you know, the growing nonprofit news world? Yeah, that's digital, you know, just mostly web-based, website-based. Why are they not eligible for any kind of federal funding? You know, and why should it be limited to legacy platforms that actually are having declining audience, you know, and aging audience as a result of just audience trends, right? Should it be the Corporation for Public Media instead of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting? Some folks have brought these questions up and, you know, discussed them, but the problem is that to get into addressing that, you would have to reauthorize the funding for public broadcasting, and reauthorization then could open up a whole Pandora's box of, you know, Republicans saying, well, we should do things this way, we need to change this and that, and, if you know, it could be harmful to the funding that we currently have. So no one wants to do that, right?
Which makes sense. I mean, it's not like you're going to have a free year to just figure out a better way of doing it. Like, you got to operate while you're having the conversation.
Exactly. So, you know, in some ways, I wonder if it being beholden to this funding system is holding the system back in some ways. But at the same time, we don't want to lose what we have. If anything, we want more of this funding. So I understand why we don't want to get into these thorny issues. But in some ways, I just wonder if it really still makes sense in the media environment that we are in today to have this funding model that basically came from the late 60s.
Okay, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.